number eight. Thank you, both counsel. The United States versus Antonio Kyle.
Please the court. I am Arthur Inman of Peoria for the defendant appellant Antonio Cobb. I'm here as a CJA appointee, the defendant having been represented by private counsel at trial and having had that private counsel removed post-trial but prior to sentence. At which point I took over and handled the post-trial motion and the sentencing and, of course, this appeal. On this appeal, we have briefed two issues. The defendant, as you know, was convicted of delivery of crack cocaine, and because of his record, including prior drug matters, was sentenced to life imprisonment. The issues that we have briefed and intend to argue here are the admission of Rule 404B evidence and the sufficiency of the evidence overall. I'd like to speak to that second issue and indicate that contrary to the government's position, there was no credible evidence available to convict this defendant. The informant, Mack, Anthony Mack, was the sole evidence of any transfer occurring. I say the sole evidence for a couple of reasons. Antonio Mack is the only one who contends that money was transferred. However, after the signal was given to make the bust to come in and arrest Cobb, Antonio Mack, who was given government money to make the purchase, wound up with both the cocaine and the money. Now, there is Mack's explanation that Cobb thought he saw someone coming, thought he saw officers possibly coming, and handed the money back. There is also one of seven or eight DEA and police officers who claim to have seen an exchange of money. I'd like to speak to that matter at this point. That DEA agent, Hunter, says that he was driving a pickup truck as a surveillance vehicle, and seated in the passenger seat with him was another DEA agent who, interestingly, wrote the official report of the incident. The driver, Hunter, says, I drove up and I saw Cobb give money back to Mack in substance. The agent seated in the cab of the truck beside him, who wrote the report and did not testify, was not called, did not include any such detail in her report.
She said she never gave it back?
She didn't say one way or the other. There was no reference whatsoever to a return of money. Now, she wrote the report and did not testify. She was not called by the government and, of course, Cobb did not call her. And I understand that Cobb does have the power of subpoena and could possibly have called her. And I submit that there are good tactical reasons why one would not want to call a member of the accusing police agency during one's own case in chief and have that person subject to cross-examination by the government under these circumstances.
No one could also do cross-examination when you call them yourselves and have their witness.
You could, provided, I suppose, that there's sufficient adversity. I think...
Why do you describe the position as creating the adversity all by itself?
I'm not sure that the court would necessarily accept the theory that the...
You wanted to try it, wouldn't it, if you were trying the case yourself?
I might try it.
I wanted the testimony, and if I had one and subjected to strike examination somebody else, it's precisely how I'd handle it.
Well, I might try that. I didn't try the...
I had a sign of him, but I said that possibility existed, though. We're talking about what he could do to get that evidence before the court.
I think that is a possibility. Not wanting necessarily to question the judgment of another counsel, where it's easy to stand here and say, yes, you should have done that, or you could have done that.
No, I'm not sure. I'm just going to question other judges.
Yes, and of course, counsel come here and question what judges do every day. There's no question of that. I do suggest that nonetheless, having this person subject to that sort of cross-examination opens several doors and windows that it may be questionable to do. But I do concede there is the ability to bring that person before the court. However, I think what's noteworthy here is that the government chose not to call that particular occurrence witness, as the government would say there was an occurrence of a transaction of cocaine and money. The government chose not to call that witness, but chose instead to call another witness sitting right by. Now, coming more to the point, the witness the government did call did admit having read and reviewed that report and never suggesting that any change was appropriate or needed to be made. So the point here is that testimony, the only corroborating testimony for Mac's version of receiving the money back, is, we urge, not credible. Mac himself is not credible.
The theory that somebody just put the money in the car or something? What's the theory?
Well, yes. The defendant's girlfriend was the only witness called by the defendant. And she indicated that there was a period of time a few days prior to this incident where Max, in fact, had access to the car driven by Cobb. And also that there was, in fact, a small black bag that was dropped on the back floor of that car. Now, Mac knew of the presence of that bag because he put it there. So that essentially was the theory of the case. First of all, Cobb didn't do it. And there's no evidence that he did. There is, however, uncontradicted evidence of a manner in which material could have been placed in the car. So, with those elements in mind, with the lack of credibility of the government's case in chief, we submit that there was no credible evidence. I'd like to reserve any remaining time for rebuttal and just observe that there was no credible evidence of a transfer of money and cocaine sufficient to convict Antonio Cobb beyond a reasonable doubt.
All right, counsel.
Thank you.
All right, counsel.
Good Court, Greg Walters on behalf of the United States of America. Your Honors, the standard of review regarding the sufficiency of the evidence, which this Court is well aware, is whether a reasonable trier of fact, when viewing the evidence in the light most favorable to the government, could have found the defendant guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. Respectfully, the argument the defendant makes does not cast the evidence in the light most favorable to the government. In fact, he's arguing credibility, and he's arguing what inferences should be drawn from the witness that they put on, as opposed to the inferences that should be drawn from the government's witnesses. We submit, Your Honors, that the proof in this case, regardless of the impeaching evidence, which was certainly brought out in cross-examination, overwhelmingly supports the verdict of guilty in this case, and that the defendant has not even begun to meet the standard of showing the insufficient evidence. To briefly address Agent Hunt, the fact that that wasn't mentioned in the report, Your Honors, the jury was in a perfect position, respectfully unlike this Court, to judge the credibility of that witness as he took the stand and explained that, yes, I saw this occur. I saw the money handed out the window, and no, it's not in the report. The jury was in the position to accept or disregard that testimony. But what Ms. Raymond has not even addressed is that this was a distribution case. Mr. Mack undisputedly went into that car. He had been searched 3 times prior to that without crack cocaine on his person. He came out of that car with approximately 4.5 ounces on his person. Based on his testimony and those facts, certainly the jury reasonably could conclude beyond a reasonable doubt that distribution of crack cocaine occurred in that car.
Is that what they claimed to have been in the little bag?
Yes, Your Honor.
That put in there 2 days before.
It became clear in closing argument that that their theory was 2 days prior to this, Mr. Mack somehow through an act of clairvoyance knew that he was going to be arrested, therefore put a bag of containing crack cocaine in the car, and it just worked out perfectly for him that night to be able to show up on a buy bus as working as a confidential informant, reach in the back seat behind him, and pull that 4.5 ounces out. The jury was certainly in a position to disregard that theory, especially based on the government.
Well, they did.
Yes, Your Honor. Briefly, with the 404B issue, he hasn't addressed it. The only point I would like
to... Why bother addressing if he has?
Thank you, Your Honor. If there are no further questions, I'll return to the remainder of my time. I would like to note, and I have to apologize, there is a scrivener there in the government's brief on page 16. I miscited the case. Line 3, United States versus Staples, the volume is 202 and not 203. I apologize to this Court.
Thank you, Counsel. Counsel, you have it. 1 minute, please.
Just briefly, I don't think the argument was that Mack was clairvoyant, but that maybe Mack found a convenient place to go.
The question is whether the jury believed Mack, right?
That's the question, isn't it, Counsel?
Well, I think
who did the jury believe?
Well, that's a question of credibility, isn't it?
Well, I think the jury chose to believe Mack.
Right.
I think the verdict gives that conclusion, yes.
No. If I adjourned by that, that's the end of the program, isn't it?
Well, I'm sorry if we're not...
If I were adjourned by that, it doesn't defend our sense of decency.
Well, I guess it's my job to see... And if you are not jarred, I suppose that I haven't done my job, but...
Well, I haven't done your job, it's just that the evidence does not jar me. No. It's a shame to do you.
Unfortunately, my time is up. I hope the Court reads the brief and it's jarred.
No.
Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel. Thank you, Counsel. We're precise.